Aloha, this is Clint Hansen from Maui Luxury Real Estate, and you're listening to Maui Real Estate Radio on the KAOI Radio Group. You're listening 1110 AM, 98.7 FM, and all their stations all over Maui. If you have any questions, always feel free to contact us directly, but you can listen to this show wherever you hear your podcasts. Today, we of course always have Byron Yap of Axia Home Loans, and also Jace. Oh, wait, not Axia, that's right. You
Yeah,
moved. Tell us about where you're at now.
Byron Yap of the American Savings Bank. We're a local
Yeah,
bank.
back to
Yes.
Maui. All right.
Yes.
So, and then of course, including new big moves, Jason Economou away from the Real Estate Association of Maui, now venturing off. And I saw your bid for Senate. You want to tell us all about that, where you've been, why you've made the choice to transition, and how you look to help Maui's future.
Thanks, Clint. It is great to be back on the show with you. I always love talking to you guys. And yeah, it has been a wild few months. I left the Realtors Association of Maui in early October. And, we just reached a point where professionally it made sense for me to move on. So that's what I did. I loved my time working with the Realtors Association. The membership was incredible. I miss my government affairs committee every day because that was just such a great team of folks that are just so engaged and care so much about Maui County. So it was a great community to be a part of, and I learned a ton while I was there. But after 5 years, I reached a point where I just kind of wanted to mix it up a little bit, and I saw that in response to the wildfires. And with everything going on in the county, especially with our housing crisis being exacerbated so much by the fires, it was really an opportunity to go off on my own and have an even bigger impact, a bigger ability to get involved with the recovery efforts. So I launched Economou Law and Consulting. It is a small boutique law firm slash consulting firm where we specialize in government relations, housing policy, alternative dispute resolution, and corporate facilitation. So it is a very non-traditional practice that I've started. And quite frankly, the majority of my business is actually on the consulting side of things. I'm not a huge fan of the practice of law. Because my philosophy is really that we should try and solve problems before they get out of hand. And usually when people call an attorney and hire an attorney, it's because the problem's gotten out of hand and it needs to be litigated. And that's great that we have the litigation system in place and our legal system in place to help resolve disputes between folks and organizations. But I want to get involved before it gets to that point. And
Yeah.
also, I hate billing people by the tenth of the hour. I hate billable hours.
Getting paid, hate billing people. But,
Exactly. So.
and you know, I imagine too, it can be a little frustrating being part of the Real Estate Association of Maui. You know, I've been a realtor for 20 years, well, 22 years on Maui. And, you know, we've constantly over the past multiple decades testified the desperate need for additional housing and programs that should be put in place so the taxes get put aside to build the infrastructure necessary for developing. And only now that it's, you know, an emergency situation are some of those things being heard, even though it's been something that we've testified. And I think there's absolutely a stigma associated with a realtor because they see the profit, they don't see the work associated with it. And, you know, really, our ethics are to obey the laws of the land. And we work towards trying to maintain property rights, not just because it's profitable, but because it's for Maui's people. So, you know, the work that we've done, you know, helping establish a community land trust like Nahali o Maui, or, you know, thousands of hours that we've donated, you know, actually, tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds, well, actually, yeah, hundreds of thousands of dollars, hundreds of hours, and our blood, sweat, and tears are always overlooked because you have the title of realtor attached to it, which can be really frustrating. So I understand wanting to branch out and just attack the problem at the root without being encumbered by a title.
Yeah, it's been an opportunity, a huge opportunity. And there were folks that really just wouldn't talk to me before when I had that realtor title on my job description. And now suddenly they're like, oh, well, you don't work for them. And oh, you're still saying that we should do this. Okay, well, maybe there's a point to that. And I kind of understand it. You know, when you have a pecuniary interest in advocating for people, you know, on behalf of people, then it becomes difficult for them to trust you. And even with the realtor brand, you know, you guys have a pecuniary interest in getting more housing. When more housing gets built, that creates an opportunity for you guys to sell it or to manage it. So you get some benefit from that. And honestly, a conflict does arise in certain circumstances. One of the things that we're seeing with our current crisis in Maui County, with the housing crisis, the market rate for rents is going up because the demand has increased. And so people are increasing their rates. And that's not just the private property owners that are suggesting the increases. It's also property management companies that are sometimes in support of these increases. And in instances where there's these short-term rental units that could be serving as long-term rentals, a lot of times the property managers don't even want to tell the owners about the huge incentives that are going to be offered to them to convert to long-term because the property managers are afraid of losing their commissions. And I don't want to vilify the property managers for that because they live on the same island and in the same universe that we all do, which means they also have to deal with inflation. They also have housing costs that have gone up. They also have to, you know, figure out how to travel, how to do everything within the bounds of capitalism. And everything costs money. So of course, you know, the property managers might not want to lose their value from having these properties move to long term, but ultimately it still comes down to the same fact, which is we're putting profits up against people. And in this, you know, I don't blame the folks whose math isn't what I would want. I blame kind of the system, you know, not to start ragging on capitalism within the first 5 minutes of the show, but we're all kind of stuck in this situation. And you know, you hit the nail on the head before when you said we've been advocating for certain policy changes for years that, you know, wouldn't have prevented the fires, but they would have created the inventory necessary to house folks. You know, our housing crisis
Local housing.
now, we've been in a housing crisis for decades,
For
and it
years.
got way worse overnight with those fires. We lost, you know, just upwards of 2,000 housing units, if I'm not mistaken. That equates to about 8,000 individuals that are currently sort of in limbo when it comes to housing, and 3,000 families.
It's absolutely right. I mean, seeing this disaster from 10 miles out, 20 years, and watching it brew has been terrifying. And now that it's culminated into this disaster, it's great to see that the state and county are finally starting to do something about it. But it's something that we've, you know, mentioned putting aside, you know, taxable funds to put in infrastructure and to change zoning laws so that we can have higher density, you know, have opportunities for people to get into their first home and to alleviate the burden, you know, while simultaneously not taking property rights. We're adding to the pot. We're generating housing and we're helping Maui's tax bases. So I've always been glad to hear, you know, that we're starting to see, you know, the county turn around. And even this is even before the fire, putting infrastructure, you know, opportunities and tax incentives in place for developers and stop having this us versus them mentality. But, you know, we need to hit this with all wheels on the ground. And I would love to hear your thoughts on possible solutions and opportunities for Maui to basically solve these housing issues, you know?
the bat. I think I want to give some credit to Governor Green. His housing proclamation, his emergency housing proclamation, it became very controversial because of the timing. He actually released this emergency housing proclamation with the Build Beyond Barriers working group to try and get through some of these impediments to necessary housing development. And because of the fires and because of other issues that came up, it became this big controversy that it really shouldn't have been. The plan was a pretty darn good one. And I think that if it was allowed to move forward, it could have gotten some really necessary and good projects off the ground. So you have seen instances where folks like Governor Green and, Nani Medeiros would have been, if you're going to put anybody in charge of a housing program like that, she was actually a really great person to be put in charge of that. And it's really unkind how she was treated and unfair how she was characterized.
She was vilified, attacked, stalked, threatening letters, both physical and emotional harm. It was quite surprising. Somebody that's literally here to help solve the problem was made an enemy. And to try to hurt somebody that's trying to fix the problem is just beyond me. I testified on behalf of Bill 131. It's basically a tax mechanism so that short-term rentals can both benefit and pay for the housing of Maui's displaced people. And at the end of it, they're like, okay, so who do you work for? Maui Luxury Real Estate? Okay. And it was like, how is it that they continue to create an us versus them mentality? It's why things don't get done. We need to work together on solutions, not vilify people that are there trying to help.
It's easier to point fingers than to solve problems. Maui County has this playbook that we do when we have a problem, whether it's housing or tourism management or even, sea level rise in the environment. What happens is folks mobilize and they talk about the crisis at hand. We talk about the housing crisis. We talk about the environmental crisis. And then they bring it to the county council, and the county council gets all this rhetoric together. We need to do something. We're going to do something. We're going to act like there's an emergency here. And then they commission a report, or they put together a board and commission to cover it. With the tourism management, in the middle of all that's going on right now, just last week, they had introduced legislation to create a tourism management commission. Now, we already have an incredible amount of vacancies in the existing boards and commissions. There are already lots of community groups that have come together and come up with great ideas for tourism management and have reached out to the county council members, giving them these ideas. I was a part of one of these community groups that Kelly King had organized. So there's already ideas out there. But rather than doing anything, implementing any solutions, trying to move forward, the idea is, well, let's get a report or a commission to do the heavy lifting. And then when that commission or when the report gives us guidance, we're just not going to do it. We're going to say, we got it. We spent money on the report. We're not going to do it. And the perfect example of this, Clint, is the Maui County Comprehensive Affordable Housing Plan. The number one item on the Maui County Comprehensive Affordable Housing Plan that came out in 2020, I think it was, that it was released, zoning reform. According to the Comprehensive Housing Plan, zoning reform was supposed to be completed by 2023, Clint. Before the fires, Maui County was saying they were behind on that it would be done by 2026, something like that. And now I don't think they're even working on it. I have no idea where comprehensive zoning reform is. That was the number one item on the Comprehensive Affordable Housing Plan in 2020. And I'm pretty sure it was in the top five items for the one in 2020 or 2018, and then the one in 2016 before that. So we've done three, count them, comprehensive affordable housing plans in under a decade, all of them calling for zoning reform, and we haven't done it. So maybe the first thing that we need to do on this list of how to solve the problem is actually following the guidance that we paid for and stop wasting time and resources adding commissions, adding studies, but taking advantage of the knowledge that's already been given to us and working towards legislative fixes. And so when I talk about zoning reform, I'm talking about increasing density. If you want to keep the country country, I'm in the same camp as you, man. I love Maui for how much agricultural space we have and how much open space we have. I think that is necessary, and I do not want to lose that. And the only way to not lose that and still get housing is to be comfortable with density where housing already exists. So we need infill projects. We need to increase density in residential zoning districts, upzone. We need to target projects that are perfect for mixed use development. A few weeks back, I had the pleasure of testifying on a resolution to send a piece of rezoning legislation for the Kuin-Ka'ahumanu Center to the planning commissions. The Kuin-Ka'ahumanu Center is, if you're not familiar with Maui, it is our shopping mall in central Maui, and it is, like many other shopping malls in America, a dying mall.
Very much
I
dying.
think it's I think it's a beautiful spot. It's a great location. I think the architecture is great. And just because of the nature of retail and the internet, the mall is not doing well. And it's zoned heavy industrial. So if that mall can't function as a mall anymore and it gets sold, the most likely purchaser is going to be a heavy industrial purchaser who's going to use it for a heavy industrial use. Maybe like a warehouse, a giant warehouse right in the middle of central Maui.
Where everyone lives.
Why would we do that? But when the argument is made to allow for mixed uses in there, to allow for residential development or redevelopment in there, you have folks like the Sierra Club showing up and complaining that they're going to uproot trees in the parking lot and that they might add 10 feet to the level of the buildings and that it might ruin the view while you're driving down Haleakala Highway, like, or sorry, Hana Highway. Like, what are you thinking? We need to stop listening to these folks who just don't want housing and use whatever arguments that they have at their disposal, because that's really what it is from the Sierra Club. That's not a natural, beautiful landscape that they're arguing in favor of preserving. They want to preserve a shopping mall so that you don't get housing for your kids in there. That's what they're arguing against when they're arguing against a rezoning project like that. So we need to stop listening to the NIMBYs, the not in my backyard folks, even if they're saying not in my backyard for reasons that we might agree with, like environmental reasons. And we need to start listening to the folks in our community. And what the folks in our community, the real people in our community, the working class people, folks that got theirs 30 years ago when they moved here and own their nice plot up in Kula with their restrictive zoning that means that they don't have to deal with neighbors. Let's listen to the folks in Kahului. Let's listen to the people in Wailuku who want housing for their kids so that they can stay here. And so
I
increasing
couldn't agree more.
density, upzoning. What else do we need? We need to stop building for cars. If you go to a local neighborhood like Pakakala, you'll notice that these lot sizes are 6,000 square feet. According to the County of Maui, you're allowed to have one housing unit and one accessory dwelling unit that might be two bedrooms on there. Now,
Pat, wait,
if
just
you actually
about that specifically, having less a car centric. Have you gone to westmauigreenway.org?
No.
So I actually did a radio show on that with Lee Chamberlain, and Lee Chamberlain has been championing this for over a decade now. And he's been trying to work towards having all these interconnected bikeways. And they've actually, this goes back from the 80s, from the Complete Streets program up until local studies. And we've championed and petitioned and had hundreds of people show up to the county to testify on the benefit. And there's even multiple laws in place that requires adding these additional infrastructure. And It has both public and private support and, agreements between all the paths, uses railway networks, old cane haul roads. It's a massive web of interconnected bike paths for alternative transportation. It's brilliant. And every single time it comes up, it's just like you're saying, let's have another study. Let's try to figure out, what it means. It's like there's already been millions upon millions of dollars in studies. The agreements are in place, and there's literally funding sitting there that could build this. And then instead of using that funding that's there, it sunsets, and that funding is no longer available. Meaning that people have to get in their cars or get on a bike on a main road to get potentially run over. I just lost a friend this last year to getting hit by a car because there isn't opportunities to bike safely. I have to take my child's life at risk in order to get on the road because the county can't get out of its own way because of the bureaucracy. Like you're saying, creating a committee and a study doesn't fix it. The more committees with that are don't have people sitting in it, the more they can't do. If you create more of these groups, the longer the chain it takes to get something done, and the easier it is for that chain to break. You need to consolidate and focus your efforts on core goals, and those core goals need to function to help Maui's people that live and work on Maui. I don't understand why, I'm made to be the enemy, when I point these things out, when I've, been raised on this island since I was a baby. And, I have been hit by a car. I have had every single one of my friends that bike regularly get hit by a car. So, it surprises me when there's real solutions on the docket and opportunities to, make these things happen that don't cost money to our local people because it's from federal dollars, and though that money sunsets, like, what is the logic in that? I simply don't understand.
Wish I could explain it. I think it's fear. I think that's probably the primary cause. So if you're a person who's in office, you got one of the hardest jobs. I can't. So you mentioned I was nominated for that open Senate seat, and I jumped at the opportunity with the timing, and my business hadn't really taken off yet. So it was just good timing and a good opportunity to be of service to the community. I've worked with Gil on the food bank board. I have immense respect for him, and it would have been a huge honor. Just even to be considered for the seat was a huge honor. And I was so relieved that I w did not receive that seat, and I knew Troy was going to get it because Troy is the obvious best choice for that position. And I was, even if I got it, I don't think I would have been able to run. Because running for office is incredibly hard. And then when you're in office, pretty much half of your constituents are always upset at you. If you do something good, half of them are going to be upset at you. If you do something bad, all of them might be upset at you, but at least half of them are going to be upset at you because we're divided as a people. We all get upset at each other.
Even when we
If
agree
you
on
run
what
for
to do.
office, what'd you say?
Even when we agree on what to do, you know?
Exactly. But if you run for office, I think you need to accept that sometimes you have to make difficult decisions. And I think a lot of our elected officials don't understand how representative government works. They think, well, we'll just tally up the testifiers. And if an issue comes up and more testifiers are opposed to it than in favor of it, then we'll oppose it because that's how democracy works. But they forget. We don't have a direct democracy. That's not the way that our government is set up. We have a representative government because your average person, your average resident, is too busy trying to survive right now. They're too busy working usually two jobs, trying to pay their bills, trying to raise their family, taking care of pets, whatever it is. They're too busy, and we have elected officials who are paid and staffed and supported to keep an eye on these issues, learn about them, become experts, and make the difficult decisions that we just don't have the capacity to even consider. And when you're an elected official, I think you really need to get comfortable with the possibility of making a decision that will be criticized either immediately or a couple of years from then or a decade from then. and potentially being vilified and potentially losing your office, even when you do the right thing that is right for your people. And our elected officials have lost sight of the fact that they need to make the hard decisions on behalf of the people for the benefit of the people. And, they don't always act for the benefit of the people. Some of them, we've seen these corruption issues in Hawaii coming up over the past several years. I would much rather that my local politician make a decision that is unpopular and lose office than make no decisions at all, stay in office for a decade, and then I find out that they were taking bribes the entire time.
Can we go back to Jason? I'd like to go back to the mixed use thing, mixed use you were talking about, because I remember we interviewed Mayor Bisson twice, and he had the same concept about, you stacking or having a community around the shopping center, or you know what I mean, in the shopping center for less travel. You had talked about that.
His
Have you
work communities.
Are you working on those kind of things right now, Jason, or those ideas?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely involved in some of that. And I just by virtue of my agreements with folks and my business practices, I don't like to go into to too much detail on what exactly I'm working on until they do.
Yeah, the
But
fiduciary
yeah,
responsibility.
certainly. And even the Kahumanu Center, that was something that under the Victorino administration, when I was still working for RAM, I was involved in the visioning for the Kahumanu Corridor. That they were working on redeveloping that area and redesignating certain pieces of land there because it makes sense. And like Clint, like you said, man, we're everybody votes Democrat in Hawaii. We're supposed to be for the environment. We're supposed to be for healthier and happier communities that support each other. For a social structure that cares about the group and not just the individual. But if you look at how our housing systems work, it is so selfish. Everybody just wants their single family home on their small plot of land or their big plot of land. And they don't want to have to worry about taking care of other people in their community. So yeah, I hope Mayor Bisson keeps on engaging it, but he has been super busy with the recovery efforts. So who knows how long it'll take for mixed use development to really get at the forefront. But I can tell you, I've been in conversations with some of the federal folks that are working on the issues on the ground here, some of the state folks, and it is an incredible time because even with groups like I don't want to call people out by name, but folks who previously might have had diverging opinions on housing policy are starting to come together now because the crisis has really surpassed a point of no return.
So, out of curiosity, are you going to finally see some of the, reduction of bureaucracy so that things can actually get accomplished, as opposed to passing the buck off to some study or group actually have decisive action?
Hopeful. All I can do is be hopeful. I think it's such a difficult thing. It is the bureaucracy is so baked into our system and how we do things. What we really need is legislators that can really take action. And I think it'll require a bigger shift, a bigger paradigm shift for our populace in order to give those legislators the mandate that they really need to get housing built and to make significant systemic changes. But the truth is, I think Maui County is at a point where they are going to be forced to scale down. There are an unbelievable amount of vacancies within our county government right now. Some of the departments are down to a quarter of staffing than they usually would have. So what's
I think
happening
about
is,
700 open positions at the county or something like that.
yeah,
Seven.
that was the number I heard.
Oh,
700.
it's like how I didn't even know that many people worked at the county. To have 700 open positions is mind-boggling.
Yeah. And whenever you have even a volunteer board and commission, that needs to be staffed by folks. So all of this bureaucracy, whether it's by the legislators themselves or by people who have been appointed to boards and commissions, all of it reduces the capacity of the county to address the needs of the residents. Maui County, before the fires, really was not good at meeting its obligations to residents. You know, we shirked our responsibility on infrastructure development. We shirked our responsibility on you know, processes that get housing built. We shirked our responsibility on wastewater management. We shirked our responsibility on recycling, on potable water, on park management, you know, just maintaining our parks, on addressing environmental issues in our county. We have shirked our responsibility for decades. And then every crisis that has arisen because of that shirking of responsibility got exponentially worse overnight on August 8th. So there are some members of the county council who are still proposing new boards and commissions, and those folks are going to keep on doing that sort of thing. But those boards and commissions ain't going to meet. They're not going to be able to get sat. I mean, we made amendments to our charter that were supposed to be met that the county hasn't met yet since our election. So it just won't happen. And eventually, my hope is that those legislators and those decision makers who keep on pushing for more bureaucracy just finally wake up when they look around and see that nobody's there to do the work that they refuse to do themselves.
Is there a
So
way?
what would you,
Go ahead.
sorry. Well, I just one last question. What would you, Jason, sum up to be your main push with your company? Like, is it going forward? Is it creating more affordable? Is it streamlining the process? You know, what is your goals with, you know, what you're trying to do?
So, and this actually isn't my company specific. This is just me. You know, I'm just talking as somebody who has had the insane position of being a student of housing policy in Maui County with a front row seat for the past 5 or 6 years. I want zoning reform. I think that is one of the most meaningful, long-lasting changes that we as a county can effectuate. And that's, you know, certain upzoning, increasing density in certain residency areas. You know, building code reform is good too. If we can do something about those daggone fixture counts that keep on getting in the way. You know, we have a lot of folks who have the land and have the inclination to build additional accessory dwelling units on their property, and they've been thwarted for years because, oh, it's one too many fixture. You know, hey, why can't we do that? Before that, though, so in conjunction with zoning reform and all that goes into getting more housing, we really need to figure out potable water. We, as long as we have water shortages, it's not going to make sense to keep on increasing the draw from the water. At the same time, we need to figure out what we're doing with wastewater. You know, not just the cesspool conversion issue, because that is another apocalypse waiting to happen. We really need to figure out expanding capacity on our existing wastewater infrastructure and then creating new wastewater infrastructure. It's unlikely that anything is going to be built in Central Maui before 2029 because the new wastewater plant's not going to be up until 2029 at the earliest. So anything that does get built from here on out is going to require, you know, these pocket plants, they call them. They're small wastewater treatment plants. And for those, you're talking about just a $20 million cost. Right there, right off the bat, that adds $20 million to a project.
And we don't have the
So,
engineers to make that. That's the problem. To me, these things do need to happen, but how exactly do you cut through the bureaucracy? How do you shorten the process so that there's people as opposed to hearkening, or pushing their responsibilities on these little subcommittees and groups actually take responsibility and action? I mean, how do you have reform on the county level so that we, and I remember this was something that I looked at like 10 years ago. And the problem was, is it's so difficult and it takes everybody to agree. And it takes like two full terms or something. I didn't really understand. But adding bureaucracy is significantly easier than reducing it, from my understanding.
That's what they say. I don't quite buy it. I think, you know, once again, there's means like the emergency proclamation that Governor Green had put forth. I think that could have cut through a lot of the red tape, and it still could cut through a lot of the red tape. There's other ways to do it, like coming up with design standards for by right development. You know, get folks in a room and figure out what are we okay with a development. So if a development is going to be 100 units, what percentages does that need to be? What design standards do we need? And having it, you know, creating a rule that's saying if a developer meets these design standards, there is no discretionary approval required. They can just build by right.
Yeah.
That would do a lot. Part of the problem that we have is we keep on making different agreements with every developer. So when there's a workforce housing agreement, it's just with that project. And the next project that goes in front of the council might get a very different workforce housing agreement than the previous project. So that next project can't really assume anything from the projects before it. So it doesn't allow developers to learn or base their planning on any set community standards. It's constantly up in the air. And that increases carrying costs, that increases everything. So a developer has a lot of the same costs, if not more costs, than you or I might have with a house. When they get the land, you know, they're paying for that land like we're paying a mortgage on our house. You know, it takes loans for that. So the longer a project takes to drag out, the less likely it is that the project will pencil out, and that'll increase the cost. So all these NIMBY folks that I've been in meetings with, some of these folks that want to know when the opportunity to intervene is so that they can get in their way. And I said, well, what do you want to intervene on? Any reason, any reason. They really believe that they're doing a community service by dragging out this process, by making sure that everything is harshly scrutinized. And what they're forgetting is that the longer they drag it out, the less likely it becomes that any housing gets built, not just in that specific project, but it scares away all the other folks that want to build homes. And also it increases the costs of any housing that does eventually get built, because everything took so long and the costs went up and the materials went up and everything went up. So, you know, part of it is that paradigm shift, getting the people to stop intervening as much. Part of it is really overhauling processes by which we have approvals, creating by right development, eliminating some of the discretionary approvals from the council, and really eliminating the council from making some of the decisions that they're not experts in. You know, we have a planning director and we're going to have a housing director that are probably better suited to make, you know, requirements or recommendations for housing development than some of our council members who don't have experience in housing development or housing at all.
How do we make this by right development? I like the sound of it. You know, I'm assuming that there would be a outline stipulations associated with, you know, meeting criteria and benefit to the community. Like, how would you envision that?
Oh man, I haven't really mapped out the buyer. You're asking me to go down a path, and I'll just be completely pulling stuff out of a hat, man. I don't want to do that to your listeners.
All right. Well, we're gonna have to have another show then, because I like the sound of it. You know, at the end of the day, you know, the county and the state has the right to its people and providing for its people. And at the end of the day, people have been, like myself, have been pointing out for decades now that this disaster is here and we need to, you know, deal and create solutions. And the fact that they have pushed that responsibility away from themselves and, you know, maybe to maintain their seat, or maybe just out of sheer frustration on not knowing what to do, establishing a set of rights that if you create housing for local people, sell to local people, house local people, you know, and meet those criteria, should just be an automatic yes. It should be because, you know, a lot of people don't realize this. While groundwater is a major issue, you know, going back to the plantation days, and I do believe in water rights, there is a large amount of groundwater. I mean, we could have more water. We have as much water as Oahu has, you know, but significantly less use and distribution. The problem is infrastructure. It's always been infrastructure. Getting the water from where it is to where it needs to go. Holding tanks, piping, all costs, massive, massive amounts of money. Tax incentives could be put in place in order to create housing for local people. It is not difficult. It is doable and is within the power of our local and state government. They need to put these programs in place and have it developed as rights. It is really hard to see somebody drill a well and not be able to use it because they can't get somebody up to tell them whether or not they can tap it, you know?
Yeah, we need to scale back some of the regulation, but really we kind of need to put the regulation more in the hands of qualified experts.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm
expert.
Yeah. Let's hire the experts that are really qualified to sort out this housing issue instead of necessarily relying on the county council to use their discretion on what the best housing solutions are going to be for that project or the modifications that need to be made for that project. And then relying on just members of the community to come and testify and provide these solutions. You know, the same thing is absolutely true when it comes to water and infrastructure. And part of the issue with sprawl is because we're not building the infrastructure ourselves. You know, if the county was more directly engaged in the development of infrastructure, they can guide where development goes.
Yeah.
But right now, you know, if somebody has a plot of land that's already got its entitlements, even if it's not necessarily close to anything that we want the housing to be close to, if it's gotten its entitlements, they'll put in the infrastructure and they'll do everything. And now you've got sprawl. So
I thought it was interesting, you know, the county was in negotiations for over a decade to acquire land, you know, and were arguing and trying to get approval. But again, like you're saying, there was nobody making the decision to finally make the purchase. The people who own the land were literally dying of old age because they had been going through the process. And then they sold to I think like West Maui Land or something along those lines. And you know, everybody was like, oh, West Maui Land swooped in there and they bought it and they're bad developers. And I'm like, okay, I understand the anger associated with that. But at the end of the day, the county had the opportunity to get it even cheaper. And then, you know, West Maui Land's like, oh yeah, I'll sell it to the county. They can buy it. Sure. Go ahead. You know, like it needed to happen. They're dying of old age because the county can't make a decision. If they want that land, buy it from West Maui Land. It's still there. Nothing's been done with it. Buy it. Set the money aside. Buy the land. If you have a problem with it, fix the solution and build what you want there because the people want housing. And it's still all there. They could put a czar in charge or a small group with the power of the purse and the ability to acquire land. And then once that land has been acquired, set up another committee to put entitlement on that land. Then you can sell entitled land to developers. The sale of the entitled land pays for the bond that you created to acquire it. That land becomes more valuable from what the county has done. Not only are they building affordable housing, putting stipulations inside to help Maui's people, but they're making money off of it. Maui County can be turning a profit by creating housing for the people and creating a tax basis. It is not rocket science. People do this everywhere. It's simple. Do it, Maui. Just do it.
Now I want to bring things back around to the issue that an issue that came up earlier, which is the vacancies. And you know, we can change the rules in Maui County and make things streamline processes, make it easier. But still we need the folks to do the work. And with 700 vacancies. No matter what changes we make to the rules, if at least some of those aren't filled, you won't have the county employees necessary to do the work. And that brings us back to this rental housing crisis. And now I'm going to get on my soapbox again. If
All
you thought
right.
I was on my soapbox before, just wait, I'm going to get on a bigger soapbox now. And this is a call to the property owners and particularly the landlords out there. If you guys got that 3%, that 2.5% mortgage interest rate during COVID, there is no reason you should be jacking up your rents. If you have increased your rents, 20, 30, 100% over the past couple of years, if you're one of those property owners, those landlords, you are the reason why people are leaving Maui County, why we have such a limited number of qualified professionals to serve this county and allow it to function properly. If you are one of those folks that bought a property that was a long-term rental and has since converted it to a short-term rental, you're part of that problem, especially if you have that beautiful interest rate of like 2.5% or 3%. We need to really take a look at our system and how we play in it as individuals and as homeowners. Even this concept of fair market value, I kind of hate that term because who the hell told you life was fair? Who told you anything was fair? You know who knows life isn't fair? The 3,000 families that lost their homes by no fault of their own in the fire. They know life isn't fair. So this notion of, well, fair market value says that my property that I was charging rent of $2,000 for the past decade, suddenly I can get $4,000 for it. And even though I don't need the $4,000 a month off of those tenants, I'm going to get it anyway because it's fair. You're making that up. That's just your greed. And you're just justifying your greed. You are putting profits above people. I am calling on landlords, on property managers, on everybody right now. If you have a housing unit, I'm not telling you make no profit off of it. You need money to be able to make repairs to it. You need money to pay your bills. You need money. We're all stuck in that system. But how much money do you really need? Do you need to increase your rent? Really ask yourself that.
Yeah,
And
so you
if the answer is
$10,000 for a
no, please
four-bedroom
don't.
house, renting a four-bedroom house for $10,000 because you're taking the opportunity that you have in front of you is scary and terrifying to Maui's people. I mean, to go find a rental for your house and your pets, $10,000, that's an impossible
Insane.
number. And I'm okay with the idea of incrementally increasing rents because costs increase and whatnot. But like you're right. It's price gouging. There's a big difference between fair market value and charging $10,000 for a place. Now, I personally think that the county and state should work with a lot of these vacant homes that are sitting there because they did recently, I believe, like, what is it, 18 months ago or whatnot, put the ability for temporary housing for like doctors, nurses, police, fire, teachers, and whatnot. And I think that's great that really does work because there are so many homes here that sit vacant, 10, 9, 11 months out of the year, 6 months out of the year. Some of them are only sitting vacant 3 months out of the year, 4 months out of the year. And that's an opportunity to rent to people who live and work on Maui, at least, traveling nurses or whatnot. Until they're able to find stable housing, there should be mechanisms in place that work with, private-public partnership, for these essential workers. I mean, doctors and nurses are in such short supply, specialists. If you need to go to an ear, nose, and throat doctor, it's going to take you like 2, 3 months before you can get an appointment. And that's almost any specialist. I have friends with cancer and cancer doctors that I know, and the amount of time it takes them to get the help that they need is absolutely terrifying. And if we had a way for these people, even if they only had a 3 month rental, don't make it illegal for them to rent to local people. Certainly, short-term rentals are a bad, thing. Give them the opportunity to benefit Maui. Give those mechanisms in place so that they can help Maui. I see it as fairly straightforward, but those bills in passing don't go very far. I've always been a strong belief that the 1031 exchange is massively abused. I think that it's part of the reason that you see overinflation of real estate prices. I believe the 1031 exchange is a very important vehicle in order to reinvest and create housing. But if you have housing just become a pool of money and a tax haven, that's not going to create housing. It's just not. I created a bill and I submitted it to multiple people, and I got zero response. And I, it was it hurt, I don't want to abolish the 1031. I want to modify it in a manner that allows housing to be created, instead of this limited time factor that we're stuck to. It can open it up, buy vacant land. How funds can be put aside in an escrow company specifically to develop that land so long as it meets the local requirement. I mean, to me, that's a very straightforward solution. And then as opposed to money pooling and growing the value, the same way that stocks get overinflated and create a bubble, the same thing happens with housing. There's just so many people that keep on pouring, generational wealth into housing, and it's not. The purpose of the 1031 is to build, it's to create, it's not to pool money and tax shelter. And I would personally like to see the 1031 modified, but still, do people listen? No. I mean, they're so busy than the day to day, and there's so many other departments and committees and groups that they have to placate and make happy that they don't have the time to look for real solutions. So, like I said, I would love to see. The bureaucracy drop and actual rules and laws get passed.
Me too. Yeah, that's what I'm working on. That's the goal here. If you don't mind, I would also like to address the short-term rental owners and this notion that you might be actually taking a loss if you participate by housing some of these Maui residents who are as long-term renters. With the programs that are coming online. So one program that is currently online is the FEMA Direct Lease Program. If you have a short-term rental or a timeshare or a unit that generally isn't used as long-term rental inventory, FEMA will negotiate directly with you and they'll make the payments and they are paying a premium. Now, they don't disclose the actual amounts publicly. That's between the property owner and FEMA. But it's very similar to what Governor Green was proposing just last week, where we're talking about property owners making $5,000 a month for a one-bedroom unit, or $7,000 for a two-bedroom unit, or $10,000 a month for a three-bedroom unit. And then FEMA or, Council for Native Hawaiian Advancement or the governor's office, whoever's running the program, they're going to take on a lot of that burden as far as, making sure that the unit is being taken care of, making sure that it's maintained, doing checkups on the unit and the unit occupants, and even removing the occupants in a much faster manner than the landlord-tenant code would generally allow, because these are license agreements. So the unit occupants in these short-term rentals won't have a landlord-tenant relationship, or a traditional landlord-tenant relationship with the unit owner. It becomes a license that's granted to them by the organization running the program. So it's much faster and much easier to remove a tenant who's damaging the property or not abiding by the house rules. So it significantly decreases the risk that your average long-term rental landlord has. And it pays at a premium, which is comparable to what you would be making if you were operating short term at like 80% capacity. And that's how they came up with these numbers. They looked at the rates that short term rental units were offering, one bedroom, two bedroom, and three bedroom, and they made comparable rates to an 80% occupancy level, which is what most of them reported as their average level of occupancy in a month. So for the property owners, it's not like you have to take a hit to help your community or a community that you're doing business in. You still get to get an incredible benefit that's paid for by either the federal government or the state government or by these nonprofit organizations, and they're good stewards. And you might actually reduce some of your costs because you might not be paying a property manager.
Yeah.
So
And
there's
it's an
and
opt-in too.
you won't be paying TAT, you won't be paying property tax, you won't be paying a lot of the expenses that you have to pay when you do a short-term rental.
You're going to get a lot better basis. You know, your income is going to go directly to profits as opposed to paying a lot of those expenses like taxes. So it's a huge benefit. It's, I think, a brilliant move, definitely in support of it. And it's an opt-in. The only thing I think is that, you know, that hotels should have both the benefit and burden associated with as well to bear that because they consume resources as well. You know, and I think that was a very easy thing to point out. And I was a little surprised that, you know, I was ostracized for it. You know, I think having the people who benefit from Maui, you know, contributing to the housing is a fair assertion to make. And I was a little surprised to me. I thought it was a little telling, like of where maybe some corporate contributions are coming from. That's what it seemed like to me because the funds need to go to Maui's people. And you have small groups of individuals who have this opportunity and they should take advantage of it. So I think having the opportunities and expenses also shared among larger members of the economic community is just a logical conclusion. That being said, we are kind of coming to the end of our time. I really appreciate everything that you've contributed, and I wish you the best of luck on your ventures. I know right now it's about, you know, picking up clients and you know, helping them understand the process that we're in. Hopefully, we'll see outside departments, both private and public, reach out to you to work on some of these solutions. You know, to me, it's a question. It's an imperative. It's not of how we're going to do it. It's when we're going to do it. Let's make it happen now. And people like you that understand from the inside workings of our community are well positioned. So I do hope people reach out to you in the future.
Yeah, one of the
Me
nice
too.
things I learned today talking to Jason is, you know, sometimes you meet with these consultants and they're only one way. You know what I mean? It's we got to do all the paperwork, you know. And I think Jason brings a fresh approach, having worked in the affordable industry for years. You know what I mean? That he's, hey, let's try to work this thing out. Let's look at different opportunities instead of the same bureaucratic or same way that our county has been going. You know what I mean? More departments, more things. And I hope Jason can get his clients through these journeys because Maui needs it. We're in desperation for affordable, you know, rentals, housing, whatever, you know. And I wish you the best.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. It has really been a pleasure being back on the show. I'm happy to be a guest anytime. And if anybody wants to learn more about me, feel free to check out jasoneconomou.com, JASONECON as November, OM as Mike, OU.com. Just Google me. I'm sure it'll find something.
So go ahead, and this is Clint Hansen with Maui Luxury Real Estate, and you're listening to Maui Real Estate Radio on the KAOI Radio Group. And sign us off, Byron.
Well, Byron Yap with American Savings Bank. I really enjoyed this one, and I did Google him. It was real easy. I just spelt his name out. Boom, I found him. A lot of different things you can find him with. So have a great day.
All right.